I'm good at some things.
I know.
I make a great grip.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
Jackie.
That's Jackie. And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
And boy, man, after last time, how can we top the topic that we talked about last time Jackie was on the show?
How can you top sex?
Yeah.
With romance.
Yeah. Yeah. Wine, dine, chocolate, or however you define it. Yeah, I think that's how you're going to top it. Let's stop talking about that lusty stuff that we're teaching our children.
Oh.
But, yeah, so today we're here to talk about romance because it's kind of interesting when you think about it. Like, everybody has a concept of romance, but when you start to ask questions or to try to probe it out of people, you find that there's a lot of varying ideas of what it is and, like, mm-hmm. what counts for romance or what elements make up romance. So seems like a good topic to maybe explore a little bit.
First, we have an icebreaker.
We do have an icebreaker, yeah.
Jackie, mm-hmm. who is your first celebrity crush?
First celebrity crush?
Yeah. Talk about crushes in the last one. We're talking about crushes in this one.
It's my first real crush I remember having on someone who was in my TV was Mark from G-Force.
What's G-Force?
So, like, this little cartoon where they were, like, birds. Not like Voltron, where it kind of all went together, but they did kind of fly. There was a ship.
Was Mark a cartoon person?
He was a cartoon.
That's amazing.
I'm surprised you didn't catch on to that until
I had
that.
No idea.
You know, Mark and Jason and Keop and, Battle of the Planets. So that was the first time I kind of remember thinking little feels for a fictional character. But then, like, real-life-y person, River Phoenix, I guess. I had a framed picture of her.
Nice.
And then he died.
He's young Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm. All the feels.
Wait, from The Last Crusade? That was...
From the TV show. Young
okay.
Indiana Jones.
I was going to say, I didn't think he was the young Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade.
No, he was
Crusade.
Also in Sneakers. I loved him in Sneakers.
Yeah. Actually, two out of the three of my crushes that were on my teenage bedroom walls are dead.
That's tragic.
And the third is a really right-wing Christian fanatic.
Can't win them all, I guess.
That kind of...
But he really
batting
likes...
Batting a thousand there.
He really likes the banana example with, like, evolution. And just fits.
It does.
Oh, my... Right, we're not doing that show. We're not doing that show right now. We're doing this show. So go, Ryan. That's what you get for bananas. Go.
So mine might sound weird. It's not so much the celebrity. It was a character that the celebrity played that I had the huge crush on. And that was Anne Hathaway's portrayal of Mia Thermopolis in The Princess Diaries.
I've never seen The Princess Diaries, so I don't understand... Much like I didn't understand Jackie's reference, what the hell you're talking about?
It was a Disney movie from the start of this, I guess it'd be the last decade now, because we're in 2015. I meant to say century, the start of this century. Just a Disney movie, based on a book, live action
Julie
movie.
Andrews.
Julie Andrews.
Oh, nice.
You know what? I also have a bit of a crush on Julie Andrews because she's super elegant, no matter if she's, a governess or a queen of a fictional nation of Genovia. But I watched the shit out of that movie. Like, just...
Like, where are the tape?
Well, it was a DVD, thankfully.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah, no. Wrong century. Wrong century, Jackie.
No. I watched it, and I would watch it with the commentary on. And so, like, the last time I watched it with Sarah on Netflix, I would, like, point out stuff that I had learned from the commentary. She's like, how do you know so much about this movie?
No reason.
But it was just, I had a really big crush on the character. Like, Anne Hathaway, of course, is a beautiful person. But for some reason, I was less interested in... the actress or the physical person embodying it, and I was more in love with the character, you know.
So it hasn't carried on through then, like, her other movies and such.
You're
like, oh, Anne Hathaway's new movie.
Well, she was in The Princess Diaries too, and I liked her in some of her recent stuff, but
she was in
it's that
movie.
Character.
Yeah, it was really the character, you know. Mm-hmm. It's and then the next time it, but the like I guess like an actress that it, I did follow through would be Kate Beckinsale. I liked her, but no, for first celebrity crush, less the celebrity and more the character.
That's turn of the century too. Like, that's you were like reasonably old at that point. Like you were in your late teens at that point.
Yeah, so I would have been
you were at an age where you could like responsibly consider it.
Yeah.
And be like, all right, I see the appeal of this person.
All right, what about you?
I think I was 7, maybe 8, and it was Jordan Knight from The New Kids on the Block. I fucking love The New Kids on the Block. To this day, I have no idea why. But yeah, Jordan was my dude.
He was my favorite.
New I had kid. Like, he is and I didn't
my favorite new kid.
Yeah, yeah. Jackie has hung out with him.
Mm-hmm.
Had wine spilled on her. Brian basically just stomped.
He even said, oh, I'm sorry, was that?
Yeah, basically just stomped all over all my childhood dreams.
There is YouTube video of me dancing with him, actually.
Awesome. We're linking to that over Ryan's face.
You know what? The story gets even better because he was at Blistem, Canada. He came.
You're going to break my heart.
And they do costume karaoke, or they used to every year, costume karaoke. So Jordan came to our party, which was a karaoke party. He got up on stage and he actually did a New Kids song, karaoke.
For those of you on the audio version, I am crying a little.
I asked the karaoke jock if that had ever happened before, and he's like, no.
But yeah, I don't know. It was a thing. I didn't really understand what crushes meant at that age. But looking back on it, I definitely totally had a super crush on him, which is probably weird. I'm fine with that. Quick witty deflection. What's romance? What do you define as romance? That was I'm super good today.
That segues.
Sorry, Jackie broke my heart a minute ago. I'm taking a second to recover, Ryan.
Sorry, I just ended up thinking about who my first, like, male celebrity crush was. It was Gerard Butler in 300. Yeah. Yep. No shame there. Just Gerard Butler, King Leonidas, 300. Yeah. So.
I think Molly Ringwald was my first same-sex crush. The little lip biting. The lip biting.
Oh, yeah. She just does that. Yeah. Oh man! But anyway, what is romance? What do we define as romance in life, as opposed to romance in media?
Really difficult.
Well, romance, I think, like you kind of alluded to that at the beginning when you talked about chocolate and roses, and that's kind of the thing I think that pops to mind when we talk about romance. It's that kind of show of love, maybe. Okay. A little bit. That kind of extra stuff. It's not the expected. It's the kind of the extra on top of the everyday.
But the other thing I just realized right now, I don't know why it didn't come up in the pre-show, is I have a gendered conception of romance.
Hmm.
Not that I think it should be the way. It's just when I think of how a man expresses romance, it's different from how I think of, like, so, like, when I think of romance, I think, you know, giving chocolates or giving roses or Romeo scaling a tower, as opposed to when I think of romance for, not what a woman experiences with romance, but I think of it in terms of the traditional, like, more gendered, almost like passive.
Have you considered the notion that you might be a Disney prince?
Maybe.
None of them have beards.
So we do have that gendered kind of thought of it, right?
Except for Chewbacca.
He's not a Disney prince.
He is now.
Oh, that's true. Forgot. I keep forgetting. Maybe I keep...
Blocking it out
that Disney and Star Wars. But yeah, I think there is that concept that romance is that gendered... One's doing the actions and one's receiving.
Yeah, almost like that traditional medieval guide of courtship.
Yeah.
But then when I think of romance... Like, when I try to think of it outside of that, I have a hard time coming up with an answer because I tend to oscillate between, like, romance as not a noun or a verb or whatever, but romance as a concept, romance as a feeling, romance as a set of actions, romance as, you know, a state of a relationship. So, it's really hard to pin it down. But I like... just to try to maybe frame it all together or bring it back together, Jim, you had a really good metaphor of bread and cake.
Yes,
in the pre-show,
the cake bread duality,
and I like it because we're already talking about the differences between how it's portrayed in the media or how it's portrayed in the popular consciousness,
the bigger concept,
as opposed to the lived experience of romance or how it interacts with us in our day-to-day life. And I thought your cake and bread metaphor was really interesting. So perhaps. Jim, what's
the cake? The cake bread duality.
Yeah.
I believe I explained it once as you can eat cake and cake is delicious. And in the same way that the romantic moments, feats of romance are like cake. You know, an example of a feat of romance would be something like scaling a tower to do something. Often marriage proposals take the form of feats of romance. Mm-hmm. You know, they're those sudden shocks where you're like, oh shit, yeah, I love this person. Oh yeah. You know, and don't just resonate for, you know, the people involved in the romance, but often for people outside of it it sort of encapsulates their conception of romance.
That's so romantic.
Yeah, I mean, the best marriage proposal I ever read was in a comic book, Sandman Mystery Theater. It was this gruff, no-nonsense cop, and he's just like, listen, you want to get married or what? She was like, yeah, I think I do. He's like, cool, I gotta go do this thing, and then we'll come back and we'll figure it out.
They didn't have
a wedding or anything. He wasn't even the main character of the book. It was just, it was the final issue, she's just like, let's go to dinner. He's like, we've been going to dinner for you. Look, do you just want to get married? And it was, because it was so casual. It was it felt like such a safe question for it.
Did you see the one of the guy recently that took pictures every day
for a year
without
links in the show notes
without his girlfriend knowing?
That's a little weird, but at the same time, I sort of admire it.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
I have two feelings of this. First of all, it's a little stalky. Like, it seems a little creepy.
I'm to quote a wizard, Merlin in Once and Future King, he talks to Arthur once about love, and he says, one day I'm going to fall in love with Nimue, who's the Lady of the Lake. And he's like, then, at some point in the future, she is going to push me in a hole and roll a big rock in front of it, and I will be trapped there forever. And Arthur is like, you know that. And Merlin's like, yup. He's like, why, Merlin, would you let her do that? Because you know it's stupid. Why would you do that? And Merlin's like, well, I'm going to be in love. And people do foolish things when they're in love. I mean, that's the part of the delight about it, is that romance is the sort of permissibility to do foolish things mm-hmm. in the name of love. What is it from Taming of the Shrew? Or more recently, 10 Things I Hate About You. Sacrifice your dignity on the altar of love.
Yes. Yeah, I do like the idea that the guy took a year
mm-hmm.
and, like, purposefully and did this every day to put this whole compilation together to do the final proposal.
Romance is maybe a license to like, the notion of cake in romance is a license to do foolish things to make people we love happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is maybe, but you cannot have cake all the time. Anyone who is a grown up realizes that you go through that phase in college where you're like, yeah, I can just eat cake all day. And then at some point you're like, oh God, oh, I can't, no more cake, no more. And sometimes you've had a bite and sometimes you've had a piece and sometimes you've had, I don't know, 7 pieces. Sometimes you just stopped counting after 6.
Sometimes you went back to the store for a second cake.
But bread is the opposite of that. Not the opposite, but bread is a sort of companion. Bread is warm. You can totally eat bread every day. You can have different kinds of bread. It comes in all kinds of varieties. You can make your own. You can buy it at the store. You can buy it at bakeries. I mean, I'm really just now talking about bread because bread is fucking delicious. But the point is that bread is the everyday stuff.
The stuff that sustains you.
Yeah. Bread to me is, and I don't know, most of the romance I desire is bread romance, partly because I have a really weird conception of cake romance that really never, ever turns out well. Like, when I get foolish, I get really, really foolish in a way that becomes hard for other human beings to identify. It's like, why did you think this was a good idea? I'm like, listen, just I painted a mustache on this octopus for you.
That's really hard.
That never happened. It is really hard. Thank you. Thank you, Jackie.
That would be like, wow.
This just in, Jackie and I are in love.
Look at all this effort you went to do this thing
for
me.
But no, but Brett is, this, Brett is
the
like...
The octopus consent would be my question.
I don't know. I didn't really use an octopus. I just needed an example. No, Brett is falling, is taking naps in a heap. You know, Brett is that moment when you flop into someone's lap after a hard day. It's all those things in between.
So is bread like the comfort and the
sure
that whole?
And it's not. I mean, it's a pretty fluid analogy. I mean, everybody's sort of going to have their own conception of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the neat thing about it is everybody can sort of acknowledge a distinction between cake and bread.
Do you think sometimes that romance masks the fact that there's not really bread there?
Maybe. Okay. I don't know enough. Like as a person, I don't know enough about romance. I have all these conceptions of it. I mean, I'm not quoting my own experience. Not even with the octopus thing. I'm quoting wizards and things I have read and things like that. Is the majority of my conception and framing of romance comes from that and reading texts on the philosophy of love. So I mean, take that for what it will. But it seems like everybody I've talked to about the cake bread duality, which is now the name for it, can go, oh yeah. Like there are the cool things that you do, like driving out in a rainstorm into the country and feeding each other strawberries in the car. But you know that you don't do that every day.
Surprising someone at the airport.
Yeah. Like as
and
opposed
almost missing that person because they went out a different door.
It's the voice of experience. That's so sweet. But yeah, as opposed to, you know, the everyday stuff that makes it happen. I mean, yeah, you can't just have cake.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you sometimes you want to, but it seems as you get older, you realize that that's sort of a juvenile conception of romance. Like the notion that it is going to be princesses and towers all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it is not. You have jobs and lives and sometimes kids and, you know, responsibilities. I mean, no cake is also not very good.
Well, and romance might be the partner that doesn't necessarily do laundry very often doing all the laundry.
Also the voice of experience?
Right, like, no, just those little things that we can show that we really appreciate the other person.
Yeah.
I think a lot of romance is just, hey, I'm thinking of you, and I did this thing to kind of put my thinks into something tangible.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think like media romance is just kind of showy.
Mm-hmm. Right? Media romance terrifies me.
Well, the portrayals of what romance is in the media is scary. I think it's very unhealthy in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, in the sense of it paints things as, you know, rewarding persistence.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, or alternately blaming people who don't desire a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Or things like that. Like it presents people as heroes and sort of goals, heroes and objects and things like that. I mean, the notion of romance and relationships essentially is partnership. If it's not that, then you don't really have anything.
I think a lot of times, too, we equate romance with what you feel when your relationship is new.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So new relationship energy is a scientific thing that happens to your brain when you're newly in love with someone or with someone. It doesn't even have to be love. Like, it could be just you're with someone and they're making you feel these feels.
Yep.
And there's things, mm-hmm, that are firing off in your brain. And we're doing all these crazy things or these things, mm-hmm, that you wouldn't normally do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we kind of think, where's the romance gone?
Yeah.
Well, and that kind of peters out of the passion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or what does it all mean, right? I don't feel this,
mm-hmm,
these strong feels anymore. It's because of this thing that we now know of this new relationship energy. It lasts 6 months to 2 years, right? Anywhere. It does feel loud. So maybe you were able to kind of binge on all the cake for that time because of all this energy you had and all this passion. You wanted to do all these things.
And then you're full of cake and you're like, oh.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it's all about context.
Yeah.
Too.
Right? I mean, it seems ultimately contextual. Like, everybody's going to have their own definition. I would be suspicious, I think, of anyone who didn't.
Mm-hmm. Like, there was a great book. I've yet to read the full book, but it's... I went to a talk about the science of sex. It's called Come As You Are,
okay.
The book, which, again, we can link.
Oh, yeah.
But she was talking about context, and they've done some really neat experiments with rats, and kind of, like, we're stimulating different parts of the brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the front part of the brain, back part of the brain. And the front part of the brain, when it's stimulated, is kind of where people, or the rats are, like, going, ooh, and they're aroused, and they're curious.
Ooh.
And the back part of the brain is the, like, oh, God, right? Where the rats are doing the anxious thing. So in a regular environment, so context, such as a regular lab, regular lights, regular noises, that's what happened when that was done. When the rats were put in, like, the rat spa, right? So it was nice and nice and dark, right? This nice environment. Then the front part, it was the arousal, and the back part was stimulated, and it was still the, ooh, you know, the arousal, curious. And then you put the rat in another context, the bright lights and the music was at different volumes, so the rats couldn't even get used to it. And I guess they very specifically talked about...
Is it like rat rave?
I guess. This rat was put in here. And Iggy Pop actually was the music specifically used in this experiment.
Okay.
So it's a very anxious environment. And so the front of the brain was stimulated and the rats did the thing and the back the same. So it's very contextual, right? Like, it's like, hey, but you liked that yesterday. Right?
Yeah.
You don't like
that
now. Or I'm making dinner. Like, get off my neck. Or
yeah, I wrote a blog post about that, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. This was one of the first ones to go up. And it was that notion. Like, I sort of divvied up notions of love and intimacy. But one of the things with love is, like, not only... Like, you could hypothetically establish a scale about which you love somebody if you define love as putting their needs ahead of yours.
Mm-hmm.
Which works just as well for romantic partners as it does for, like, children and family.
Yeah, I think that's a good
and,
basic
yeah.
So, but love.
By doing so, by trying to establish a spot on that scale, it would constantly change, and it would change other people's. But also, it changes all the time based on context, mood, how your day is going,
mm-hmm.
if this person is frustrating you. Like,
if your kids have been pawing you all
again,
day.
if you were in a relationship with another human being, whether they're your friend or your family or your partner, and they do not occasionally frustrate you, I just don't believe you. Like, or you might be the Messiah.
Or a sociopath.
Or that. That's true. But, I mean, there's some of the feelings we sort of associate with romance. I mean, the media one is always, it's always jealousy.
Mm.
Like, that sort of, I want what other people have.
Mm-hmm.
Or I am angry because they have something I do not.
No, is that jealousy? I don't know if, like, I've always treated jealousy as also bound up in the idea of loss. You know, like
the fear of loss,
yeah. Or whatever, or the
yeah.
fear that something else is better. You know. So, like, it's more than just, like, envy.
Yeah, it's a sort of angry anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing with jealousy, is not really necessarily a feeling, per se. It's kind of the symptom of another feeling.
Mm-hmm.
There's something below jealousy. There's something below what this feeling is manifesting as, right? So it is either a fear of losing someone,
or
a fear of insecurity, or... You know, that fear of abandonment, fear of insecurity, those are two big ones
mm-hmm.
that create jealousy. Fear of inadequacy
mm-hmm.
as well. Maybe I'm not good enough,
mm-hmm.
right? The thing that really gets me is in our modern idea of romance. Maybe this is fed by the media. I don't know which way it goes.
Yeah.
We see it a lot in media, though, is that we are equating jealousy with love. Right? Yeah, if somebody is not feeling jealous, then they don't love me. Or I'm feeling jealous because, oh, hey, I must love you because I'm feeling jealous.
That notion of possession.
Yeah, or it becomes a barometer of, like, how intense the jealousy love is. Well, how intense your love is based on how jealous you would get.
Yeah, so the Nick Jonas song that's come on my radar is called Jealous.
Which we will not link to.
No, we're totally linking to it.
Ah, you're going to get page views.
There is a line that's repeated. I turn this song off as soon as it comes on the radio in my car. It's not something I want my kids listening to. I have a right to get hellish. I still get jealous.
Awesome.
So yeah, he's saying like this is right because you're my girlfriend. So I have a right to get like this. I have a right to be angry because you were talking with someone else.
Listen.
No, you don't.
Listen, you're my girlfriend. Let me explain to you briefly the concept of dibs. All right?
And of course she's hot, so...
Yeah, yeah, that's a thing.
It's not really her fault.
I actually think I pulled that line from a 50 Shades of Grey GIF that I saw.
As an aside, the super masculine side of me, my favorite side of that, or part of that song is let me put on my chin music, because like I like the idea of like trying to imagine him actually getting punched in the face. Not because I want violence to be visited on him, but I can't actually imagine him being in a fight and like being able to take the chin music, you know, as because like context is always a boxer thing. Give him a little chin music is always, you know, jab the other person, you know, hitting the chin.
Does Nick Jonas have a black belt?
I don't know, but
I feel like
would you know that maybe, piece of information?
Because I feel like it was one of the it was on a Much Music thing many years ago, back when Much Music played music. That was
and
how
you
long.
Were watching like a One Direction.
No,
like...
no, it was but they were talking. If I'm remembering the context correctly, it was like the Jonas Brothers were still like because they were the sort of heirs to the Hanson throne.
Yeah, he's not in One Direction, is he? He's a Jonas Brother.
Yeah, and they had, somewhere I mentioned that one of them,
the name Jonas,
I think I am recalling memories from 15 years ago. Just in passing, but I remember I noted it because they mentioned that one of them like intensely studies martial arts and studies Taekwondo, and I was also studying martial arts at the time. I did Okinawan karate for a lot of years, and I feel like one of them like has a great deal of martial training, and would readily engage in some chin music.
Yeah, well, it could be him.
Probably totally wrong.
It's probably just because of like the delicate pretty boy face kind of deal. I have a hard time imagining like him taking like I imagine him having a glass jaw.
Yeah, fair enough.
But that's only because
you're a large, physically imposing man.
Well, yes, and I'm ashamed to admit, like he's got that super high falsetto part of it, so like it just doesn't sound very masculine to me.
Ouch! Yeah, that's
I know that reveals that I'm not a good person, but. We kind of already knew that.
But we don't usually include it on the podcast.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, you've got some problematic views of masculinity there, man.
I told you, like, I have toxic views of what it is to be a man.
We need to do the Manliness podcast at some point.
Didn't we already do that?
But yeah, what it is to be a man is a lot of unhealthy things, right? That in this concept we have of masculinity, and jealousy does.
You have to have power relationships and possessive relationships. You have to, like, control.
You have to fight for your partner.
Yeah, a lot of these... Jealousy is a warning sign, right? If somebody is acting overly jealous and overly... Like, they're texting you constantly when you're out or not believing where you are or, you know, send me a picture, prove it, those kind of things. It's not, oh, he loves me so much. No, it's control. Issue and those likely escalate. I've seen it firsthand.
Part of me is anyone who's not like, me, send me a picture of where you are. I'm like, seriously, check my Instagram, bitch. If you can't figure it out from that, did you not see the picture of the food that I just posted?
You haven't geotagged it. Doesn't count.
Oh,
I've heard so like not the flip side of where jealousy is a good thing, but sometimes the perception of jealousy is thought of as an indicator. So like I'm going to use just a male-female relationship of she gets really worried that he doesn't get jealous, you know, and therefore maybe he doesn't love her because, you know, she goes and hangs out with other people or dances with a guy, and he doesn't seem to get jealous about it. Like, there's really weird kind of... I'm not saying this is normal. I have heard of this as an example.
Yes. I feel like normal's a word we want to sort of throw out in this context.
Probably, yeah.
In general, I mean...
Well, that's a flip side of somebody trying to make someone else jealous, too. That's still a power struggle.
I don't think she would necessarily try to. It's like,
wait a minute, why aren't you jealous?
Yeah.
And that's why it's so ingrained in us that is a marker of the depth of someone's love for you.
I just like cuddles and video games.
Yeah, jealousy is an interesting
thing. That feels like a natural end to the podcast.
It has been the natural end to a lot of things.
Let's see it, folks.
But that's part of it, I think, like when we talk about the contextuality of romance, is that there aren't any rules. Mm-hmm. There's no, in a sense makes it hard. I mean, you examine everything from medieval manuscripts on courtly love, moving forward, you know, 7 centuries to, you know, you get the 80s and you get, in the 70s, you have all that, like, this sort of relationship help stuff. And you have that now too, but there was like men are from Mars, women are from Venus, the classic bullshit stuff.
Yes.
All the way now to we have more refined stereotypes and we have more representative stereotypes, but we also have things like pickup artist culture.
Mm-hmm. Is that still a thing? Is that
God, yes. Is that not unfortunately, going away yet? It has not gone away at any point.
Yeah, I see it sometimes at the bar.
But it's that notion that there is a strategy, there are rules, and there is mm-hmm. a game, and you can play it. And you sort of go through specific ritual motions, and then things happen. I mean, the pickup artist culture is, well, it's problematic for a lot of ways, but part of it is, like, it treats women like a crane game. Like, no, if I get it just right,
mm-hmm.
the sex falls out.
Yes.
I put the kindness in,
mm-hmm.
and then the sex falls out.
Yes.
On a large law of averages kind of deal. If I play this game enough, I win.
Yeah, and the context of winning seems terrible, and but I mean, it's that sense of I think there is an idea that there should be structure to romance, when the fact of the matter is that not only is there no relevant structure apart from caring about each other, and, like, I don't even want to say doing stuff together. I know lots of couples that have vastly different interests.
Mm-hmm.
And vastly different views on lots of things that have incredibly healthy relationships. But that you have to sort of... It is the sort of thing that everyone has to make up as they go along. And that is what I think is frightening about it. Is terrifying and paralyzing in some cases. Because what if my rules involve an octopus? And I'm just like, I put this mustache on this octopus for you.
Well, there's one way of getting around that.
Tread softly, for I've spread my octopus under your feet.
You know, and I think it all does kind of circle back to communication, right?
Yeah.
You can't know what the rules are in your particular relationship unless you talk to the person that's in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're going to assume these rules that are in your head from whatever your socialization has been and whatever you've picked up from the media and family and friends and whatever throughout your life, whatever stuck to you, a lot of it's going to be different than the person that you're with.
I'm imagining that the sort of the mishmash of those, like the intricately, you know, written letter in careful calligraphy. Dear person to whom I am attracted, also I am British. For those of you listening, I'm also writing on my hand.
Writing in... Apparently Jim writes in British.
Yeah, well, I mean, doesn't everybody? Anyway, I would very much like to cuddle. Do you like video games? Sincerely, James.
You should have a yes or no checkbox there, I feel, though. In the letter.
Check yes or no. Sorry, I just had to draw on it.
Fold it up and put it on your carrier pigeon.
No, I wrap it. I wrap it in a chain around, like, in a locket around the neck of a crow, and I have 21 of them that fly out and sort of convene in the same play. I'm basically, I guess I'm Alan Moore. Which, I don't know, I guess there's worse role models to have.
He's got a really nice beard.
I don't.
So, I'm just, I dig this. This.
No, movie. I think Jackie, you're absolutely right. That like part of it is communicating what you want. I mean, in the pre-show we talked about the idea of belonging,
mm-hmm.
which sort of encapsulates not just constant companionship, but also the security of that companionship. They seem to go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion that, like, after you have a party at your house and all of your friends go home, someone is there to help you clean up.
Mm-hmm. You've got a team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that companionship, that security, mm-hmm. that belonging, that somebody's going to be there kind of thing. Somebody's going to bring me chicken soup when I'm feeling like crap, or mm-hmm. you know, understand that I just want to lay there or sit there, or
rub your feet at the end of a long day or whatever.
Yeah, I think romance really is in the little things.
Yeah.
Like, once we get past that kind of, I guess, more of that big showy stuff that happens more at the beginning. And again, communication. Maybe you both like the big showy stuff.
Yeah,
that is...
well, I mean, that's... And the big showy stuff is always sort of more fun to plan together anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the sense that then you can... It's like... Have you ever planned a surprise party for somebody?
Not really.
I'm terrible at keeping surprises.
Christmas is killing. Have you ever been to a surprise party?
Yes, I understand the concept of surprise
parties. I know that you understand the concept of surprise parties, but there's always, like, there's the concept of the surprise parties, and there's the actuality of surprise parties, where, like, someone comes in, and they're not particularly surprised, or everyone has made them feel bad because they think that everybody's forgotten, and...
Then they're in a horrible mood because they thought everybody's forgotten all day.
Or just... You know, someone throws in this party and it's not really what they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it's someone else's idea of a party that they would want.
Well, especially if someone said, I don't like surprise parties.
Yes, that is a thing that happens. I don't know, about 8 years ago I invented the reverse surprise party. Which is where you get the person for whom the party is for to plan the party and say, like, what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you make the arrangements and then you... invite everybody and you tell them it's a surprise party, so they won't talk to that person. Well, because that way you don't get that person doesn't get everybody's cancellations.
Mm.
Like, that's the problem with trying to plan a party like that, is all you really hear about until the day of is all the people who aren't coming.
Yes.
And so they don't get any of that because nobody's
talking
about it.
Especially in this day and age.
Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, the Facebook RSVP.
The RSVPs.
But
just our lack of commitment, I think, these days,
mm-hmm.
saying we're going to be somewhere.
It's really easy to say maybe.
Yeah.
Say maybe, or even say yes, and then at the 11th hour, there's an excuse or not turn up
yep.
or whatever.
I just didn't feel like it.
Sorry, Mad Men was just released on Netflix.
Yeah, I was mainlining House of Cards.
Yeah.
But, there's this, what makes the reverse surprise party so fun is that that person does get what they want. Because the planner and... the person for whom the party is for work together on it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if nobody, I mean, it's a reverse surprise because everybody jumps out and yells surprise. And the other person, and the surprisee is actually like, guess what? I knew about this the whole time. Surprise. And so, I mean, it turns it all around, but it also sort of creates a lower pressure atmosphere and it makes sure that everybody gets what they want, because everybody mm-hmm. who came gets the same party no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a good time. And it seems like planning your sort of cake events is like that. Although sometimes surprises are nice.
Well, yeah, and I think part of romance, too, is really listening to what your partner has said.
Mm-hmm.
And remembering those little details mm-hmm. that maybe you were in a little bookshop a year ago or something and they mentioned a certain author that they like and a new book just came out, so you bought that book for them.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Ryan has an entire notebook full of that stuff. In fact, I know you do.
So, I yes and no. For our first anniversary, I for a year kept a list of like my favorite moments, mm-hmm. and then I wrote them each on like I bought a Moleskine, and then on each page, so I collected like, I don't know, 100 or something favorite moments, mm-hmm. and then I wrote them on there, and then I tried to like do a little doodle to represent it.
Aww.
So there's
It was super sweet. I've done that. I remember when he was working on it.
I've done that, but then there's also been the times where like I got Sarah's favorite coffee order wrong for like a year and a half, and she never corrected me. Mm-hmm. And so finally, when we were having an argument about something, and this happened to come up because like the context of the argument was that I just wasn't listening, or I wasn't considering her. And so she brought up the example of the coffee, and I had always gotten her a caramel soy latte, I believe it was.
And, it's okay.
No, Sarah, I got her a caramel macchiato. Latte.
I like that.
And she liked it too. She never complained, but she goes, no, I just would like a caramel soy latte. In my mind, because I don't know anything about Starbucks, if you...
As we have like, proven. Is that the same thing?
To our previous...
Link over Ryan's face.
I know nothing about Starbucks. I was just like, you never corrected me, and how was I supposed to know? But it was the idea that, you know, I never paid attention when she made the orders, or you know, I just assumed I knew what she wanted without actually listening to what she was telling me.
So I think it would be different if she corrected you every time and you consistently kept getting it wrong.
Oh, I'm pretty sure if we were to ask her, she would give lots of examples of things that she consistently corrects me on.
I am 100% sure of that.
Yeah. I'm
one day we will have Sarah on the podcast. I
think there are things that are important and things that aren't important, mm-hmm. and like, I couldn't tell you what Gord really likes on his hot dog. I could make an educated guess.
Bacon.
But.
No, it's just because Sarah asked me, what do you want on your hot dog? I'm like, doesn't matter. I'll just eat a plain. And she's like, what do you? And she gets so frustrated because I won't give her a straight answer because I honestly don't care. And so
no,
far, she's
no,
like,
no more. We're going to get Sarah on the podcast.
I just like, season, mustard. Mustard. Happen. She goes, see, was that so hard? I'm like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like relish.
So there isn't a consistent hot dog order sometimes.
Yeah.
There's no reason that the hot dog order should always be consistent.
I'm a very capricious person. And I imagine there's a lot of people who have very capricious like desires and tastes. So, in my defense.
And find out what's important.
Well, I mean, that's...
Well, there's
that's...
the whole love languages thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
yep.
Is it getting shown that you're loved because they do things for you, or they tell you that they love you, or whatever. So it's
periodic tickling and sarcasm.
I don't think those were covered. I have a copy of that book, and I don't think periodic tickling falls into a love language.
But sarcasm, like, we're good on the sarcasm, right? I'm learning so much. Wow. But I think we will bring it to an end there. Oh, do you have any final thoughts?
Communication. That's really all.
Jackie is our expert on this.
Communication. For the love.
If you're frustrated and you feel like you're communicating, you might not be.
There is communicating too much sometimes, but yes. Yeah. For the love of cheese, talk to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't assume that just because you've been thinking about it for days on end and then all of a sudden you bring it up, that there's a full understanding is going
to
be there.
Telepathy is my favorite way to communicate romantic thoughts. Thank you, Ryan. I've been thinking about getting an antenna.
To strengthen the...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously not working. So what I need is an antenna.
Need a signal boost.
Yeah. Like rabbit ears or something. Oh, dear. Anyway.
Let's be digress.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
Jackie.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast, and we're signing off.
Stay romantic.
Ooh.
Ryan, oh, my butt.
The outros.
I know.
My butt.
It's going to be like
sore and flat.